Welcome to the One Climbs Podcast, a show about exploring life through the lens of theology, scripture, symbolism, and ideas that uplift the human mind. In 1 Nephi chapter 4, and I'm reading through the section where Nephi kills Laban. He beheads him with his own sword. And this is a very difficult section for people to read in the Book of Mormon because you have this man of God, this very righteous man, killing who is clearly also a very wicked man. But you start to think, couldn't there have been another way? Couldn't there have been another way that they could have done this without killing this Laban guy? Couldn't he have tied him up? Or couldn't Nephi have taken his clothes and still impersonated him without killing him, right? It's possible. There's a lot of possibilities. There's two posts over on my website, oneclimbs.com. One's called The Justified Slaying of Laban. You could search for it. And there's another one called Behind the Beheading, A Case for Scriptural Knowledge. The Justified Slaying of Laban is one where I detail the three crimes that Laban had actually committed that would have probably earned him the death penalty under the law of Moses at the time when dealing with Nephi and his brothers. There was false accusation. The law of Moses says, if a witness be a false witness and hath testified falsely against his brother, then ye shall do unto him as he thought to have done unto his brother. So shalt thou put away the evil from among you. So if you accuse somebody of being a robber, which would have earned you the death penalty, and it turns out that was false, then you would have received the penalty that you were accusing the other person of. And this seems like it would have helped from people committing all these false accusations. Like if you knew that you didn't have enough evidence or you were accusing someone falsely, you couldn't do that. Because if it turns out that they found out you were lying, you would get the same penalty put upon you. Because think about it, you're trying to get somebody killed. You're a murderer in your heart. You just want the state essentially to kill the person you dislike instead of doing it yourself. You're still trying to get someone killed. And so that's what Laban did with Laman. He says, behold, thou art a robber and I will slay thee. So already he falsely accused Laman and then attempts to kill him at that point. So the second crime was Laban robs Laman and the brothers. They bring all their treasure to come and buy the place. Laban lusts after it. He takes their property, takes it by force, which is what a robber does. A robber takes openly and forcefully. This is from the Jewish Virtual Library. It says, the thief differs from the robber in the fact that the former steals furtively when unobserved. They sneak in and steal. That's what a thief does. Whereas the robber takes openly and forcefully. And that's basically what they do. They use weapons, they use physical strength, they use all their cronies they get together, and that's what the robbers do. And so Laban has his servants, all of his people around him. They take their stuff and then he sends his guys out to kill them. And so he straight up robs them, right? Laban actually does what a robber does. And then the third crime is attempted murder. And this is one he committed twice, not just once. So first, Laban seeks to kill Laman with his own hands. He says, thou art a robber and I will slay thee. Next, when they come to buy the plates, he chases him out and he sends his people to go after Nephi and his brothers to go and kill them. And so there you've got attempted murder. So basically, God renders the verdict of death upon Laban because Laban had broken the laws right out in the open, not caring anything about it. He's tied in with the elders of the church, it says, too. And so it's likely that the judges at the time, they would have let Laban off, that he wouldn't have seen justice. And the other thing too is if Laban was still alive and looking for Nephi and his brothers, they couldn't have come back to get Ishmael because they go back to Jerusalem to go get Ishmael. And they probably wouldn't have been able to do that if Laban was out looking for them. And plus, Laban could have sent his people to follow Lehi and his family out into the desert, track them down and slaughter them. So said that he commanded 50 people. They were living about 8 years down in the Arabian Peninsula. There's plenty of time for someone to go after them. So if Laban's out of the picture, then they're likely to be safe and able to move around and do the things that they need to do and accomplish the Lord's purposes. So anyway, those are some really interesting articles to go read about. I know it's a difficult situation, but I think if you look deeper, you'll understand what's going on. And so basically, Laban's drunk on the ground, and Nephi comes across, and the Spirit tells him to kill Laban. He says, I've never shed the blood of a man, and he didn't want to slay him. I mean, I don't think any of us would want to just kill someone, especially if they're lying down defenseless. That seems completely wrong. So he's told by the Spirit, the Lord's delivered him into your hands. Like this whole thing, like Laban being drunk on the ground. We know Nephi is large in stature, but he's a young guy. Laban was likely a warrior, a fighter, and could probably, even though Nephi was a big guy, probably could have easily taken him out. So he's drunk. He's lying there in the alley. Nephi's led by the Spirit to find him there. The Lord says, I've delivered him in your hands. This is what needs to happen to ensure that everything else that I need to happen with you and your family can happen. I'm taking you to a promised land because this is all part of my bigger plan, etc. So he's constrained again, says the Lord's delivered him into your hands. And we know that Nephi always goes to the scriptures. And that's what the second article is about behind the beheading, the case for scriptural knowledge. And Nephi, he always looks back at what Moses does whenever he's in a difficult situation. He always finds a solution to the situation by looking to the past and looking at the scriptures and finding precedents. It's like, well, if God did this for him, then he'll do it for me here. Because God can be trusted. God's consistent. And so he's thinking about this. So Nephi begins to remember, to think, and recall these things. Now, there's a difference between meditation and pondering. So if you look up the definition of meditate, it means essentially to revolve any subject in the mind. It's a really cool visual, to revolve in the mind, right? So think of a 3D model you're moving around in your head. You're looking at all the different aspects and the sides of it. And that's what we see happening in the scriptures when people are meditating. They're thinking about something. Pondering is different. So to ponder means to weigh in the mind. You're weighing it. Think of like scales. To consider and compare the circumstances or consequences of an event or the importance of the reasons for or against a decision. So you're actually in the middle of something and you're trying to make a decision. So you're weighing everything, pro, con, and you're trying to make the right choice. And so that's what pondering is. It seems like pondering is a little more active than meditation. Meditation's more simply observing and gathering information, whereas pondering is you're actually weighing the consequences and trying to move forward. And we see Nephi doing this in 1 Nephi chapter 11 later. It says he's just heard this tree of life vision from his father, and he desired to know what his father had seen. He believed the Lord was able to make them known. And he says, as I sat pondering in mine heart, I was caught away in the Spirit of the Lord to an exceedingly high mountain. It's as he's in the act of pondering. So he's weighing some things. So when you think of pondering, it's like, oh, he's just sitting thinking about it. No, pondering is like a much deeper thought. You're actually weighing really critical things. And that's what he's doing. And I think some of us, I think we get stuck meditating, just observing, but maybe not as often do we get into the state of pondering where you're very seriously considering something and weighing. I know we all have those times in our lives that are thrust onto us because of the situation we happen to be in, kind of like Nephi here. But sometimes, you know, we can ponder things when, you know, we have the option. We can go our separate way. We can go live our lives and watch movies and play games and travel and do different things. And we can just live happy lives. But how much time do we actually spend really pondering on the words of the Lord and pondering things when we're living in times of prosperity and we seem to have everything that we need, right? Sometimes it's hard to remember to place emphasis on that. Because when you feel like you have everything you need, there's no crisis, you don't really focus on that kind of stuff. So I don't know. But anyway, Nephi's pondering here, and the Lord's telling him that, or the Spirit's telling him, the Lord slayeth the wicked, bring forth his righteous purposes. It's better for one man to perish than a nation should dwindle and perish in unbelief, especially a man who has committed these horrific acts against them that were completely unjustified, and a guy who would probably kill them again if he saw them. Because think about it, he just robbed them. So what's the next thing they would likely do? They would go to the authorities and say, hey, he has our property. He's robbed us. I mean, he has the property. He could probably hide it somewhere, but he knows they're probably going to go to the authorities, which is why he had people chase them down to kill them. So Laban's coming after him, probably whether they like or not. I mean, yeah, he got drunk that night and was laying in the streets, but he's probably going to come after him after that, right? And he probably would have slaughtered their whole family without a second thought. So Nephi's sitting there. He remembers the words of the Lord, which he spake to him in the wilderness. And he says, hey, inasmuch as thy seed shall keep my commandments, they'll prosper in the land. So he's remembering these things. He's thinking about it. And then the next verse says, I also thought that they could not keep the commandments of the Lord according to the law of Moses, save they should have the law. So you see him weighing things. He's like, okay, if I don't do this, my posterity is not going to have the law, and they're not going to be able to keep the commandments. They're not going to prosper in the land. And we see later on what happens. We see one of the sons of Zedekiah and a group of people, they escaped Jerusalem as well, and they became the people of Zarahemla. And they had, I believe, didn't they have a corrupt language? They didn't have any records they brought with them. So they had no memory of anything. And they had to adopt all of the Nephites' language and their teachings and everything, because they actually had records that preserved their ideas and their knowledge. And so we actually see a civilization that lost their identity because they didn't have these things. And that's what would have happened to Nephi and his family and their people. And we see that to a degree with the Lamanites too. They don't have the records, and they become kind of a wild and bloodthirsty people. And so next he says, I also knew the law was engraven upon the plates of brass. So he needed to get those plates. And he says, again, I knew the Lord had delivered Laban into my hands for this cause, that I might obtain the records according to his commandments. Nephi's in this conundrum. He's being asked to do something he doesn't want to do, but he weighs all these things. He ponders it, and then he finds a way to move forward. He goes, okay, I need to move forward with this. Everything's adding up. This all makes sense, and so I'm going to move forward. And so, again, we look at the situations in our own lives. It's very possible that the Lord could ask us to do something very difficult. I mean, I've been in situations where I've had something to do. I've pondered it. I've weighed the pro and con. I've taken it to the Lord, and I've been asked to go through with things that are very difficult. I've never killed anybody, but I've had to go and talk to certain people that would have been very difficult, or there's no way I would have gone and talked to some person because of a past and a history. But I was basically told, you know, it doesn't matter what the consequence is. It just matters that you trust what I'm telling you, essentially. And I went ahead and followed through, and it ended up working out just fine. And so there's been other situations too, where I've had to do hard things, and there were things that weren't even on my radar. Very difficult things. But pondering is one of the tools, I think, that God's given us, because when we stop to ponder and weigh things, we weigh the pros and the cons, we bring everything out to bear. And in Nephi's case here, it seems like he had all the tools necessary to make the decision, because the Spirit used specifically the words, the Lord has delivered him into thy hands. He said, the Spirit says it twice, that same phrase. And then finally, Nephi says, I knew the Lord had delivered Laban into my hands for this cause. That's the same language. Remember I said that Nephi tends to look at precedents. He looks to the scriptures of the past to decide how he's going to solve a problem in the present. And then he follows through similarly. He was a big fan of Moses. Now, he doesn't say this here in these verses, but you know, if you're familiar enough with the scriptures, you'll recognize that phrase, the Lord has delivered him into thy hands. The Lord and delivering into hands. That's almost identically what David says to Goliath. He's standing before Goliath, this impassable object, right? Goliath is standing in the way of them accomplishing their goals. This giant, this seemingly invincible obstacle in their path. And David says to this giant, this shepherd boy, the Lord has delivered you into my hands. And he throws the stone, Goliath falls down, and then we see Nephi doing exactly to Laban what David did to Goliath, grabbing him by the hair of their head and smiting off their head with their own sword. So the fact that Nephi kills Laban the exact same way that David kills Goliath says to me that Nephi knew the scriptures clear enough that when the Spirit said that to him, he knew exactly what to do at that point. This was a David and Goliath situation. You had a wicked individual standing in your way. You made every attempt. Now, Laban was given a lot more mercy than Goliath when you think about it. Goliath was up there. David threw a rock, knocked him in the head, cut his head off. Boom, done. He didn't really have too many chances. But Laban was given the opportunity to pass the plates on to Laman. And when they came to purchase them, they were offered this massive amount of wealth to buy the plates. Again, instead of going with it, I mean, the wealth they put up was probably enough or maybe more than enough of what those plates could have been worth. But he stole it and then tried to kill them. So not a good dude. This guy was an impassable obstacle in their way. And so the Lord delivers him into Nephi's hands, and he's dispatched the same way that Goliath of Gath was. So you have this kind of pattern here where that was the only option in this case. Had there been a just system of judges and Laban could have been taken and been judged according to the law, then maybe that would have been the case. Maybe they would have been able to do something like that. But this is Jerusalem at the time. They're very corrupt. And this is a corrupt military leader who's in cahoots with the elders. And these guys are probably all protecting each other as well. And so the only justice is just kind of like this Wild West type of justice where this is the only option they're given. But again, the important thing here, at least what I'm seeing in these verses, is just the importance of pondering again and really weighing things. And the fact that Nephi is given time to weigh some of these things. He doesn't just immediately act. And, you know, maybe it took him just a couple of minutes to come to this conclusion. Maybe it took him a couple hours. He might have sat there wrestling with it for a long time. I don't know. But the fact is, he was weighing the consequences for and against, and he's detailing these things. And there's at least four different times where he says, I remembered, I thought, I knew. And so he's putting the pieces together. He's doing the math, and then he's able to move forward and make a decision. And so it seems like the Spirit at least gives him time to think through this. He doesn't just make a rash decision. And I think that same pattern is also available to us. Like if we're confronted with a very difficult choice to make, I think in the same way, the Lord will allow us to think through the consequences and make a very clear decision. And sometimes there's not enough time. I mean, I remember being in the mission field and walking down this frozen street with my companion, and it was icy outside, and our car was just in a really bad accident. We were actually rolled a couple of times into a ditch. It was a freak accident. And so we're walking in the snow. I'm from South Texas. My companion's from Mexico City. We don't know how to walk on ice. And so we're slipping all over the place. We're walking down a road, and then we stop. And I ask my companion, I said, all right, we're just aimlessly walking around. I said, where should we go? And he thinks for a minute, and then he just points off this random street that's perpendicular to us. So I said, okay, let's go down there. Now, whether that was given to him by the Spirit or something to go down that street, I have no idea. And we happened to both look up at the same time, and way off in the distance, there's this strange movement. We didn't really know what it was, but at the same time, my companion and I, we both, not necessarily hear, but feel the words run, like was screaming in our minds. And we both immediately bolted. And we talked about this afterwards. We both got the same impression. And I didn't know what I was running toward, but we were running and just sprinting off. And we sprinted through this high snow across these school grounds. And when we finally got to the situation, we saw that it was a ladder that had fallen to the ground. And there was an old man laying on the ground with his head up beside the foundation of his house with a massive blood splatter. And he had blood coming out of his ear. So he had fallen off the ladder. He was scraping snow off the top of his camper. I mean, we were so far off, we couldn't even make out what on earth was happening. It could have been anything over there, this movement. But we both had this impression to run. And so, yeah, we found this guy and blood was pooling up in his throat. And clearly he had fallen all the way over and hit his head on the side of the foundation. We had to make a decision. Is this guy going to drown in his blood? Or are we going to risk moving him onto his side so the blood could drain out of his mouth? Because he was drowning on his own blood and convulsing. Like, I've seen animals get hit by cars and he was doing the same thing, convulsing all over. And so we had to turn him on his side because he was literally breathing in his blood and choking on it. And so, yeah, we gave him a blessing and we had to tilt him on his side. And he lived. He was able to recover from that. But yeah, it was crazy. I still remember feeling the blood splattering on my face because he was breathing and it was splattering out. Kind of gross, but you know, we were covered in blood. It was pretty bad, but yeah, he survived. So kind of interesting, huh? We happen to get in this car accident, a freak accident, to where we're having to walk. We're walking down the street. We happen to just stop, change direction, go completely a different way than we were planning on going because we were walking back towards our apartment and we just decided to go down this other way. We happen to be there right at the time we pass this school building to where out of the corner of our eye, we see this little bit of movement and we're told to run. We run over there. This guy's on the ground bleeding. He's choking on his own blood. Now, what happened was, is his wife would not have ever discovered him because she only came out of her house because she saw us running towards the house. She saw these two guys in black trench coats running down the street, sprinting towards her house and running to the side of her house. So she's like, what the heck's going on? So she comes outside going, what's happening? And we just pointed at her and we said, call 911. And I remember that from Boy Scouts. You always point at somebody and you say, you call 911. So that's what we did. And she didn't really know what was happening. So she called him and then she came out with a phone and she kind of saw what was happening. And, but what are the odds? Seriously, what are the odds? We get in the car accident. We're walking down the street. We stop on a dime. We change direction. We happen to be there right at the exact moment that we see this off in the distance. And there's snow everywhere, a couple feet of snow. So when you have someone fall like that, it muffles all the sound and nobody's outside. We just happened to be there right at the same time. And what's really crazy about this is I felt like after a while, the ambulance driver was starting to get suspicious because we happened to be at multiple other houses right when some type of emergency happened. That wasn't the first one. There was at least three of them that I can remember, but we kept seeing the same ambulance driver showing up again to all these different things. But yeah, I mean, you make of that what you will. And so, yes, sometimes things will happen to where you can't even think, you just have to act. But it also seems in some cases, it's important that you have time to make a decision and to really think about and weigh things, especially when there's a lot on the line. You know, and I think I appreciate the fact that Nephi actually has time to think about this. Just didn't say slam. And Nephi goes, okay, and cuts his head off. And you go, wow, Nephi is really obedient and trusting in the Lord. But the fact that Nephi has to wrestle with this a little bit and that he's given time to do it, I found kind of an interesting thing in the scriptures. So anyway, we see this happen again and again. If you want to do a cool exercise, look up everywhere the words meditate and ponder appear in the scriptures. And notice what happens after those words. Look at what actually happens in those people's lives. So one of the keys, I think, to receiving revelation and deeper insights and experiences with God is both meditation, revolving things in the mind and really deeply looking at things, but also then pondering those things you're meditating on and really weighing the pros and the cons and weighing those things out and and adding pieces of information to those scales and see where it comes out. And then in that very act of doing that, I think that's where a lot of times the revelation comes, and maybe why we're missing some of it in our lives, because we're not engaging in the practice of pondering so that we can know certain things. But anyway, hopefully someone found something helpful in that. The scriptures continue to yield incredible pieces of wisdom throughout. So, hey, we'll talk to you again next time. Hopefully there's something of their value that you can utilize in your own lives.